Chapter 18. Lop-Ear got married. It was the second winter after our adventure journey, and it was most unexpected. He gave me no warning. The first I knew was one twilight when I climbed the cliff to our cave. I squeezed into the entrance and there I stopped. There was no room for me. Lop-Ear and his mate were in possession, and she was none other than my sister, the daughter of my stepfather, the Chatterer. I tried to force my way in. There was space only for two, and that space was already occupied. Also, they had me at a disadvantage, and, what of the scratching and hair pulling I received, I was glad to retreat. I slept that night, and for many nights, in the connecting passage of the double cave. From my experience it seemed reasonably safe. As the two folk had dodged Old Sabretooth, and as I had dodged Red Eye, so it seemed to me that I could dodge the hunting animals by going back and forth between the two caves. I had forgotten the wild dogs. They were small enough to go through any passage that I could squeeze through. One night they nosed me out. Had they entered both caves at the same time, they would have got me. As it was, followed by some of them through the passage, I dashed out the mouth of the other cave. Outside were the rest of the wild dogs. They sprang for me as I sprang for the cliff wall, and began to climb. One of them, a lean and hungry brute, caught me in mid-leap. His teeth sank into my thigh muscles, and he nearly dragged me back. He held on, but I made no effort to dislodge him, devoting my whole effort to climbing out of reach of the rest of the brutes. Not until I was safe from them did I turn my attention to that live agony on my thigh. And then, a dozen feet above the snapping pack that leaped and scrambled against the wall and fell back, I got the dog by the throat and slowly throttled him. I was a long time doing it. He clawed and ripped my hair and hide with his hind paws, and ever he jerked and lunged with his weight to drag me from the wall. At last his teeth opened and released my torn flesh. I carried his body up the cliff with me and perched out the night in the entrance of my old cave, wherein were Lop-Ear and my sister. But first I had to endure a storm of abuse from the aroused horde for being the cause of the disturbance. I had my revenge. From time to time, as the noise of the pack below eased down, I dropped a rock and started it up again. Whereupon, from all around, the abuse of the exasperated folk began afresh. In the morning I shared the dog with Lop-Ear and his wife, and for several days the three of us were neither vegetarians nor fruitarians. Lop-Ear's marriage was not a happy one, and the consolation about it is that it did not last very long. Neither he nor I was happy during that period. I was lonely. I suffered the inconvenience of being cast out of my safe little cave, and somehow I did not make it up with any other of the young males. I suppose my long dash continued chumming with Lop-Ear had become a habit. I might have married, it is true, and most likely I should have married had it not been for the dearth of females in the horde. This dearth, it is fair to assume, was caused by the exorbitance of Red Eye, and it illustrates the menace he was to the existence of the horde. Then there was the Swift One, whom I had not forgotten. At any rate, during the period of Lop-Ear's marriage I knocked about from pillar to post, in danger every night that I slept, and never comfortable. One of the folk died, and his widow was taken into the cave of another one of the folk. I took possession of the abandoned cave, but it was wide-mouthed, and after Red Eye nearly trapped me in it one day, I returned to sleeping in the passage of the double cave. During the summer, however, I used to stay away from the caves for weeks, sleeping in a tree shelter I made near the mouth of the slough. I have said that Lop-Ear was not happy. My sister was the daughter of the Chatterer, and she made Lop-Ear's life miserable for him. In no other cave was there so much squabbling and bickering. If Red Eye was a Bluebeard, Lop-Ear was henpecked, and I imagine that Red Eye was too shrewd ever to covet Lop-Ear's wife. Fortunately for Lop-Ear, she died. An unusual thing happened that summer. Late, almost at the end of it, a second crop of the stringy rooted carrots sprang up. These unexpected second crop roots were young, and juicy and tender, and for some time the carrot patch was the favorite feeding place of the horde. One morning, early, several score of us were there making our breakfast. On one side of me was the hairless one. Beyond him were his father and son, Old Marrowbone and Long Lip. On the other side of me were my sister and Lop Ear, she being next to me. There was no warning. On the sudden, both the hairless one and my sister sprang and screamed. At the same instant I heard the thud of the arrows that transfixed them. The next instant they were down on the ground, floundering, and gasping, and the rest of us were stampeding for the trees. An arrow drove past me and entered the ground, its feathered shaft vibrating and oscillating from the impact of its arrested flight. I remember clearly how I swerved as I ran to go past it, and that I gave it a needlessly wide berth. I must have shied at it as a horse shies at an object it fears. Lop Ear took a smashing fall as he ran beside me. An arrow had driven through the calf of his leg and tripped him. He tried to run, but was tripped and thrown by it a second time. He sat up, crouching, trembling with fear, and called to me pleadingly. I dashed back. He showed me the arrow. I caught hold of it to pull it out, but the consequent hurt made him seize my hand and stop me. A flying arrow passed between us. Another struck a rock, splintered, and fell to the ground. This was too much. I pulled, suddenly, with all my might. Lop Ear screamed as the arrow came out, and struck at me angrily. But the next moment we were in full flight again. I looked back. Old Marrowbone, deserted and far behind, was tottering silently along in his handicapped race with death. Sometimes he almost fell, and once he did fall, but no more arrows were coming. He scrambled weakly to his feet. Age burdened him heavily, but he did not want to die. The three firemen, who were now running forward from their forest ambush, could easily have got him, but they did not try. Perhaps he was too old and tough. But they did want the hairless one and my sister, for as I looked back from the trees I could see the firemen beating in their heads with rocks. One of the firemen was the wizened old hunter who limped. We went on through the trees toward the caves, an excited and disorderly mob that drove before it to their holes all the small life of the forest, and that set the blue jays screaming impudently. Now that there was no immediate danger, Long Lip waited for his grandfather, Marrowbone, and with the gap of a generation between them, the old fellow and the youth brought up our rear. And so it was that Lop Ear became a bachelor once more. That night I slept with him in the old cave, and our old life of chumming began again. The loss of his mate seemed to cause him no grief. At least he showed no signs of it, nor of need for her. It was the wound in his leg that seemed to bother him, and it was all of a week before he got back again to his old spryness. Marrowbone was the only old member in the horde. Sometimes, on looking back upon him, when the vision of him is most clear, I note a striking resemblance between him and the father of my father's gardener. The gardener's father was very old, very wrinkled and withered, and for all the world, when he peered through his tiny, bleary eyes and mumbled with his toothless gums, he looked and acted like Old Marrowbone. This resemblance, as a child, used to frighten me. I always ran when I saw the old man tottering along on his two canes. Old Marrowbone even had a bit of sparse and straggly white beard that seemed identical with the whiskers of the old man. As I have said, Marrowbone was the only old member of the horde. He was an exception. The folk never lived to old age. Middle age was fairly rare. Death by violence was the common way of death. They died as my father had died, as Broken Tooth had died, as my sister and the hairless one had just died abruptly and brutally, in the full possession of their faculties, in the full swing and rush of life. Natural death? To die violently was the natural way of dying in those days. No one died of old age among the folk. I never knew of a case. Even Marrowbone did not die that way, and he was the only one in my generation who had the chance. A bad rippling, any serious accidental or temporary impairment of the faculties, meant swift death. As a rule, these deaths were not witnessed. Members of the Horde simply dropped out of sight. They left the caves in the morning, and they never came back. They disappeared into the ravenous maws of the hunting creatures. This inroad of the fire people on the carrot patch was the beginning of the end, though we did not know it. The hunters of the fire people began to appear more frequently as the time went by. They came in twos and threes, creeping silently through the forest, with their flying arrows able to annihilate distance, and bring down prey from the top of the loftiest tree without themselves climbing into it. The bow and arrow was like an enormous extension of their leaping and striking muscles, so that, virtually, they could leap and kill at 100 feet and more. This made them far more terrible than Sabretooth himself. And then they were very wise. They had speech that enabled them more effectively to reason, and in addition they understood cooperation. We folk came to be very circumspect when we were in the forest. We were more alert and vigilant and timid. No longer were the trees a protection to be relied upon. No longer could we perch on a branch and laugh down at our carnivorous enemies on the ground. The fire people were carnivorous, with claws and fangs 100 feet long, the most terrible of all the hunting animals that ranged the primeval world. One morning, before the folk had dispersed to the forest, there was a panic among the water carriers, and those who had gone down to the river to drink. The whole horde fled to the caves. It was our habit, at such times, to flee first and investigate afterward. We waited in the mouths of our caves and watched. After some time a fireman stepped cautiously into the open space. It was the little wizened old hunter. He stood for a long time and watched us, looking our caves and the cliff wall up and down. He descended one of the runways to a drinking place, returning a few minutes later by another runway. Again he stood and watched us carefully, for a long time. Then he turned on his heel, and limped into the forest, leaving us calling querulously and plaintively to one another from the cave mouths. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.